Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, Lions coming off of a Thanksgiving Day disaster. Lost 16-14 to the Chicago Bears. Bears kick a walk-off field goal to end it. They also held the ball for the last 8.5 minutes of the game. We're going to dig into all that.
This was a close game where they were leading going into the last possession, but this felt like it was a much, much worse loss than I think it actually was. Like the way it feels after the way it felt after the game was that it was another blowout, when in reality, it really wasn't. They had the lead halfway through the fourth quarter. But the failings, I guess, at the end, I think that's what really left the bad taste in my mouth.
I think it was maybe exacerbated for you with all the turkey you had ingested up to that point. That could have been a contributing factor to the way you felt at the end of the game. I don't know. You get a feeling now, like once the Bears got the ball, you know, with 8.5 minutes left, it's like, well, like it's over. They're going to end up winning. Like, I don't know how it's going to happen. Bears going to end up winning. I wouldn't have thought they would have kept the ball for the rest of the game, but when it happened, it's like, well, it's not shocking.
It was a little shocking, I think. That's a long possession. It's
not unheard of. Bears possession, what, say it's 08 or 13 or something.
You usually see possessions that are long like that early in the game. You typically don't see them in the latter parts of the game. But that's just how it played out. And I felt pretty confident they were going to get the ball back right up until the double timeout. And then that's when I was like, oh no, they're in trouble now.
So knowing that the Bears were going to go ahead, if you were to think, this is a tough question to ask. You're probably never thinking this. It's like, if the Lions got the ball back, do you think they would have been able to score to win the game? Like, no. You know, up to that point,
I thought they had a chance because they played well later in games, in close games. They've played well in the latter parts where they've been able to get within field goal. Because remember, they only had to get within field goal range. And I felt like...
Oh, I know, but that's still a long ways.
No, but if You know how this goes. When you get the lead and then you give the ball back, everybody goes into some sort of prevent shell.
Yeah. It's always everybody, yeah. You know, casual fans or less than casual fans see this, like, why don't they just do this all game?
Right. Exactly. But I was in my mind, I was like, all right, 8.5 left. I'm expecting them to go down. And if the defense tightens up like it had been, you kick the field goal, then you get the ball back, and then you've got to go against a prevent defense and just get within field goal range. And I'm like, it's doable. It's still going to be hard, and it's still no guarantee that they get within field goal range. But I thought they would have the ball with a chance to win, and I thought that was fair to ask for. And instead, we saw a couple of really, really bad mistakes by the coaching staff. The first one was, as I said before, the double timeout, right? Campbell calls the timeout, and he is setting up the defense for a key third down play. It's 3rd and 9, and they come out of the timeout. They're in their defensive set, and they're confused. They had 2 defensive calls. And depending on what the formation was, it was supposed to be check the 1 or check the 2, right? And what happened was half the defense thought one thing, half the defense thought the other. Anzalone, you could see him trying to signal to the right defensive scheme, and it wasn't working, and they were in the wrong sets. And you see Aaron Glenn right up on Dan Campbell yelling timeout, timeout, and then Campbell calls the timeout. Aaron Glenn was calling it too, but he really can't. It's Campbell that calls it, and then they get penalized for calling 2 timeouts in back-to-back, which is allowed in college, not allowed in the NFL.
Question.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a rule. That was one I didn't know off the top of my head. Did you know that one was a rule? Maybe it doesn't matter what I think, because I'm just some guy watching. What did you think? Did you know that was a rule?
I remember it being a rule, but at the same time, I had wondered if it had changed, because I thought I had recently seen a team double timeout a kicker, like try to double ice them. But I did turn to Jeremy and ask him. I'm like, didn't someone just do this? And he's like, no, you can't. And he was very adamant it was a mistake, and he was right. And for a second there, I was like, I feel like I saw it happen, but I didn't.
We watch college games. We see it a million times in college. Sure. And that's what I attributed to. It's like, well, I've seen it a million times. Why can't you do it? And then, if this is the penalty, it's the penalty. We must not see it. This is something that I always thought like Pittsburgh would do. This feels like a Mike Tomlin move where he would like continuously ice the kicker and eventually.
Right.
But yeah, it's illegal. But more importantly than what you or I think about this, do you think Dan Campbell knew this was a penalty when he called that timeout?
It's weird because when you watch him, his reaction, it looks like he didn't know it was a penalty. But then Aaron Glenn said they knew it was a penalty, but they knew that they had 9 yards. And so they were willing to take the penalty instead of allowing a touchdown, because they thought if they allowed a touchdown, then that was not something they could overcome.
Well, okay. That's fair, more or less fair. But like, if you play you in your lifetime, it's been many years.
Sure.
You used to play a lot of Madden.
Sure.
Right. The rule in Madden, and some of these analytics folks would argue, is no, you let them score that touchdown because you need all the time you can get. Just like we're already in the middle of this disaster. Like the Bears are already on the 16-yard line. Mm-hmm. This is going to get them down to the 11, or they're going to stay at the 16. And if they're down at the 11, they're probably going to convert that. I mean, they might not convert. Either way, they could still kick the field goal and you get the ball. I don't know.
But look,
right. They couldn't score a touchdown if they gave up one there. I guess they would have a outside shot at getting far enough down the field for a field goal.
They would have had about 2.5 minutes and 2 timeouts. So they would have the 2-minute warning to stop the clock as well. But it would have been extraordinarily challenging, yes. At the same time, I don't know if it would have been end of the world if they would have scored, because they would have got the ball back. And like I said before, that's what you ask for. You ask to have the ball in it with a chance to win the game.
Bears could have screwed up and it could have just been 4th and 9.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Unlikely an Alliance game, but it's possible.
Right. Yeah. You don't know exactly what would have transpired. And so I don't like taking the penalty there. And obviously I have hindsight, working in my favor.
To say. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the time I didn't like it at the time either. I didn't like taking a penalty in order to avoid what you thought was an inevitable touchdown. Right. So I was not a fan of it, but that's what happened. But that's not even the most egregious part. The most egregious part was the next play, because now it's 3rd and 4 and you come out
You've had two timeouts to get your team aligned.
Yep. And you come out and they're playing 8 yards deep when they only need 4 yards to get the first down, and then they can run the clock and kick the field goal, which is what they did. Why they're playing off made no sense to me. Now, again, Aaron Glenn fell on the sword and said this was Will Harris' first time as a starter in the slot, and I should have reminded him that he needed to be up on the line, which is accurate. At the same time, Will Harris is a third-year player who has played over 250 snaps in the slot over those 3 years. This is not – he should know the cons. He should know the game. Like, he is a NFL pro. You should know on 3rd and 4, you can't be 8 to 10 yards off the ball. Like, everyone knew it. I mean, like, but he failed to recognize that. He shouldn't need a coach to remind him. At the same time, the coach should have reminded him. And it ends up being the critical play that cost them. So I was more disturbed by that than the timeout.
All right. So I guess we're doing the full Bears review here first before we talk about the end, which is fine. So who's most so Aaron Glenn's falling on the sword. Whose fault really is all this? Are we starting to look at Campbell now?
I think it's Campbell. I do, for a variety of reasons. I know he trusts Glenn, and that's why he called the timeout. Even if he knew it was a penalty, he still called it because Glenn was calling for it. And you can blame Glenn for the third and off. But again, look, if he's off and you know that gets them off, like, I don't know.
What would be the point of calling the timeout just to put him in a position to get a first down anyways?
Right. Like,
I guess, yeah, you could look at all those things like, well, then just let him score.
Exactly.
If you're going to give up the first down anyways, like, just let him screw up out there and let whatever happened happen. And then Goff's got 2.5 minutes and yeah, it's probably not going to work, but at least he got the ball. We could at least find out if they can.
Exactly.
Somebody could get lucky. Somebody could, you know, somebody could trip and fall while he's throwing a pass, and you know, Kadarrell Hodge could have ran all Khalif Raymond all the way. Yep.
I almost feel like Campbell's biting off more than he can chew right now.
Oh yeah, big time. This is one of the questions. Do you think Dan Campbell will give play calling duties back to Anthony Lynn? Do you think that the decision affects whether? All right, so this we'll wrap it all up into this: whether Anthony Lynn comes back next year. Like, obviously, Campbell's having a lot of trouble with a lot of the nuances of being a head coach and taking on the role of offensive coordinator, not offensive coordinator, but play caller. They've made this very clear that Anthony Lynn's still doing all the game planning and everything. Campbell's just calling the plays. Like, it's too much for him. He shouldn't be doing this.
Yes. That's what I wrote after the game. I wrote immediately after the game, this was the question I asked essentially was who's most at fault for the loss. And I wrote this while he was doing his presser. And Mike, I gave like 4 or 5 scenarios. Like, remember the offensive line had 6 holding penalties, right? I still think the collective problems fall on Campbell. And I think it's just because he's spreading himself too thin and they're trying other things to, spark the offense. Now they're incorporating Ben Johnson, the tight ends coach, to try and help out with the passing game, to try and give ideas on through the passing game to help Anthony Lynn organize a game plan. And Lynn said he understands his role. He also said he's not real happy about it.
He's long gone. I read that too. He's long gone.
Yeah,
this is his only season with the team.
Right,
he's going to be gone.
At the same time, so that's the second part. Will Lynn be back in 2022? No, I don't think so. 0%. I don't think either of us think that.
And it's not because Campbell's going to fire him, it's just because he's going to leave himself. Like,
right. Here's the thing, though. Will he give play calling duties back to Lynn? I don't know.
Feels like one of those guys that he won't do it because now we're heading into that territory. He was kind of portraying himself at the beginning of being this, like, we've got to think about this all differently. You know, like and he was going to be this more modern style of head coach where there's all this input's going to be coming to him. You know, like it's one big team effort when it comes to his coaching staff. And now it's not looking like that. It's like his way goes. And like, even though the offense is now averaging 3 points less per game with him calling the plays, in fairness to Campbell, one of those games is with Tim Boyle instead of Goff, the 6-1 half dozen to the other.
Right.
But like, this is not very forward thinking of Campbell, because it seems like his ego is going to be like, no, I got to call plays the rest of the year. I got to show everybody I can do this.
Well,
no, you don't have to.
He also keeps insisting that he's not calling all of the plays, but he wants to be the one to deliver them because he wants to be the one to talk to Goff and so he can get a feel for him.
Did he say he doesn't call all the plays, he only calls the good ones?
He did not say that, but
you'll get there by the end of the year.
Here's the thing.
He does regret not throwing the ball on 3rd and 32 at his own 49-yard line 2 games ago, which – we finally on Thursday? Finally got it out of them.
It's all blending to me. It was Thursday, I believe. They had two 3rd and 32s. But yes, I think he's taking on too much. Being a head coach is hard enough as it is. I mean, look, we saw this last year when Patricia took the play calling, defensive play calling duties on, and their defense got worse as well.
I always attribute it. All right, so the interesting point you bring up there, and I know a lot of people have already talked about, they got to get rid of Campbell right away. They're already on that.
And no.
I know it's the same, because it's the safe way to go to say that, because like in the world of the NFL, like Andy Reid's not getting fired, although he has been, and Bill Belichick's not getting fired, although he has been.
Yes.
So like the other 30 coaches in the NFL, they're going to be fired. Like Dan Campbell will be fired one day.
Sure.
And like, so it is the easy way out. It's like, I'll just get rid of him now, because yeah, eventually it's going to be like, yeah, you got to fire the guy. But like, it is an easy way out, but there are the red, what did I tell you earlier in the year? Like the red flags are mounting and he's not getting better. So he's still got, they shouldn't fire him after this year. This year is a total wash. He's got six more games, but
and like, he's got a lot to learn. Not
looking good, but right. So he's got a lot to learn, but
sure.
A lot of these coaches, they've already learned a lot of this, but he's still screwing up.
Sure.
You know,
but I think by the time
they become first time head coaches.
No, but I think the staff is learning, is still having a lot to learn as well. Like you're seeing Aaron Glenn make mistakes that a first year coordinator would make, like that's, and then you're seeing Lynn that wasn't getting production, and then you're seeing him Campbell, I don't want to say overstepping, but like trying to take the reins of what he perceived as a sinking ship there.
Yeah, that's his job. So that's not overstepping by Campbell. We don't think you should do it, but it's not overstepping.
So I'm not surprised that these kind of red flags have popped up. I fully anticipated them, especially with the bad roster. But there's decision-making gaffes. But as we always say, we say this about rookies and, you know, first-year players and second-year players all the time. The way you know if that player is going to be good or not is, are they repeating their mistakes? And so that's what we need to see is, what's he repeating? Which mistakes is he repeating? Which mistakes is he not? Is he learning? Is he getting better? Because that will be a good indicator of whether or not he has a future as a head coach in the league or not. The Lions are not giving up on it. Look, we've said this several times. He has a 6-year contract. They're not firing him 1 year into a 6-year contract, right? Not unless he's got emails. Unless
something really weird happens.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So
I think you had a joke ready. You had a joke chambered. And I stepped right on.
No, that's okay. But yes, I'm not surprised by the mistakes. I am a bit surprised. There were some that I anticipated, some I didn't. And so I guess those are the ones I'm a bit surprised by.
Well, and there's also a little bit of regression on his part. We had early in the year where he was kind of ultra aggressive in a lot of situations. Yeah. It's actually good to see. But now he's like got really conservative on us. Like,
yeah. Well, then notice there's a correlation there. When he took over play calling duties, they went completely conservative. It was when he was the head coach. Yeah, I know. I think
a bad team. You should take chances when you're a bad team.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. We've said this before too. So, he has gotten passive and a little bit vanilla. And I mean, look, he found something that worked against the Steelers and he just wrote it until it didn't work anymore. You know what I mean? He did now that he's got again.
Bigger problems on that front.
Well, right. Well, yeah. But then, like, he did that again, but with other things, trying the same to do the repeat the same thing. It's almost like his playbook has been scaled down to a very minimal playbook, because that's like what he's got in his head or whatever. Whereas I think like Anthony Lynn has a much larger playbook in his head as a coordinator. And it just seems like he had more options on the table, whereas Campbell just seems to be working out of the same kind of more basic concepts.
Lunchbox. And
so, yeah, I would love to see the aggression come back. I think that's a big key to finding that first W.
All right, so on our way to that first W, let's talk about the roster moves that maybe will help them get there. First one is cornerback Fatu Melifonwu. He's been removed from IR, so now they got 3 weeks to get him back.
He already had his 3 weeks of practice. He is back on the active roster.
Okay, so maybe we see him Sunday.
Yeah, you probably will. I don't think you'll see him as a starter. They've pretty much said that Jerry Jacobs is going to stay the starter, that he's earned it. And so, you know, we'll see if things shift around a little bit as Melifonwu gets more acclimated. But for now, it's going to be Jacobs and Oworiye as the starters. And Melifonwu is going to, you know, start increasing that learning curve again.
All right, nickelback, A.J. Parker, his ankle's been placed on IR.
So that happened before the game. So that shortens down the amount of time that he needs to be on IR. So he's about halfway through his IR stint right now.
Defensive lineman Deshaun Hand, this groin injury placed on IR and then released with an injury settlement. So long to Deshaun.
Yeah, so they expect him to be healthy in a couple of weeks. Now, what that means is the injury settlement then is probably for those couple of weeks. After he is healthy and the injury settlement timeframe is up, he can then sign with any NFL team not named the Detroit Lions.
And he's going to get picked up by somebody.
Yeah.
And he'll be totally healthy.
If for some reason he wanted to go back to the Lions, he would have to wait 3 weeks beyond when the time frame of the settlement, you know, expired. But I don't think that works. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make sense for him. It doesn't make sense for the Lions. So he couldn't, because this was his second time on IR, they couldn't return him like they did earlier in the season. Once you go on there a second time, your season is over with that team. So them releasing him is basically a way of saying, we're going to save some money by cutting you, but at the same time, we're giving you a chance to go play for some other team, you know, get a head start on free agency, maybe go play with a contender. So they did him a favor. They get a little financial benefit out of it as well.
Well, good for Deshaun Hand. This will probably, and I'm serious, this is probably going to end up working out for him. And it's going to be upsetting. He was not upsetting. Good for Deshaun Hand, but like, he's going to be healthy from here on out. He's going to have very productive years out of him.
In the league, 4 years on IR, five times.
He's been hurt the whole time.
That's rough.
All right, so then there was a practice squad swap. Offensive tackle Darren Paulo, he's out, and linebacker Curtis Bolden is in.
Yeah, no real clarity on exactly why this was a move that was made. They had extra offensive linemen, so they could lose one. Paulo was the odd man out with Dan Skipper back. And Bolden, he's kind of like Tavante Beckett. He's a little bit undersized. He's kind of like a hybrid safety linebacker combo type of guy that I think they're just going to bring in and test out and see. I don't know if he's somebody that they've liked for a while, or if the plan is to develop him into next year, but they added him and lost Paulo.
All right. Now for the bad news of the injury report. Number one, running back DeAndre Swift, shoulder injury, expected to miss multiple weeks. Have we seen him for the last time this year?
No, because originally it was being reported as a couple of weeks, right? And that was ESPN's Fowler reported that. I said it was an AC joint, expected to miss a couple of weeks. Today, Campbell said he didn't expect it to be a couple of weeks. He expected it to be this week, and hopefully he'd be back next. Now, who knows? You know, that hopefully, that's a big caveat, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe he comes back for week 14. Maybe it's week 15. If it's week 15, they both kind of are right.
Right.
But he's out this week anyway.
Yeah, no, and it's not good.
No, well, it's gonna be Jamal Williams.
And we'll see some more Jamar Jefferson at least.
Yeah, hopefully, right? Ideally, that would be fun. And then Godwin Igbubuwe is going to get in there as well, right? So both those young guys have flashed. They still we're saying they expect Williams to carry the load, and what the young guys are going to get some time.
All right, wide receiver Trinity Benson, the knee injury, suspected to play on Sunday.
Yeah, Antoine Randall-El, the wide receivers coach, said he was expecting Benson to be back. He missed the last two games, but he's supposed to be ready to go.
Wide receiver Kadarrell Hodge with an illness.
Yeah, so he missed Wednesday, but was back and ready to go the rest of the week. He's fine.
All right. Penei Sewell, an illness, also with a shoulder injury. It's not, not good news.
Yeah, so he had an illness on the same day as Hodge. They were both sick on Wednesday, missed practice Wednesday. Like Hodge, he returned on Thursday. And then on Friday, a shoulder injury popped up. Now, if you'll recall, on Thanksgiving, he hurt his shoulder on a third down, or maybe it was a third down or a touchdown. I forget. But he hurt his shoulder. He came off the sideline. He slammed his helmet down. He was all mad, but he never missed a snap. He was right back in there, and he kept playing played the rest of the game. Now, it's unclear if this is a re-aggravation of that shoulder or if this is a new shoulder injury. If it's a new shoulder injury, it's a little bit more concerning in my mind. If it's just a re-aggravation, how severe of a re-aggravation is a bit unknown as well. So the fact that he's questionable means the likelihood of him playing is pretty good, but it's still, there's that little bit of wiggle room that he might not be ready. So that gets a little bit tricky if he's not.
Right guard, Halapulavati Vaitai, or Hal Vaitai, concussion.
Yeah, so on Thanksgiving, he was doing some light workouts ahead of the game, which is part of the protocols to pass, and he seemed to be doing that just fine. Then he comes to practice, gets in his practice works, gets cleared by the medical doctor, an independent medical doctor, and he doesn't have an injury designation, so that means he has passed his concussion protocols. He'll start at right guard.
Offensive tackle Matt Nelson, ankle injury.
He missed last 2 weeks. He got hurt in Pittsburgh, missed the Browns game, missed the Bears game. Now, if Sewell can't go, he is the backup.
And he's going to be the guy.
And if he can't go, then Will Holden.
Dan Skipper. Oh, Will Holden. We're not...
right. And then Dan Skipper after
that. Yeah, okay. He's coming. We'll see him running around out there. You'll look at the name on hit the back of his jersey and be like, oh, he's out there.
So Nelson, look, in Pittsburgh, he was playing very well as a sixth offensive lineman, doing a lot of road grading. Getting him back for this game with a swiftless running game, getting Matt Nelson back would be a very big help for them finding success on the ground. So ideally you have Sewell, ideally you get Nelson back and you're able to really ground and pound, because I think that's going to be a key this week.
Defensive lineman Michael Brockers, knee injury.
He's been nursing this. His snaps were down last week. Wasn't clear if his snaps were down because he was nursing the knee injury or if they were starting to seed snaps to the rookies, because those rookies saw their time increase a little bit. Thought they played well, both of them. And if he's still nursing it, wouldn't be surprised if his snaps stay a little bit low again, see more of the rookies.
All right, edge, Trey Flowers, knee injury, out.
This is his third game in a row that he's been out since getting injured in Pittsburgh. Remember, he got injured in the second half, came back, played in overtime, caused the fumble in overtime, and then caused a recovered. I keep getting those mixed up. Regardless,
recovered.
Yeah, recovered. Thank you. Now I can picture it in my mind. And since that was the last we saw him, when he recovered that fumble, that was the last time we saw him. He has missed the Browns game, the Bears game, and now he'll miss the Vikings game. And they thought he would be close to ready, or they would have put him on IR. And it just keeps lingering and lingering, and he's out longer and longer, and he has not practiced since that Pittsburgh game. So not good for your $20 million defensive end.
I was gonna say two more years left on his contract, right?
I think it might be three. Let me check real fast.
It was a five-year deal, wasn't it? A five, maybe it was a six-year.
He's signed deal. Through 2023.
So two more years.
But next year, yeah. So after this year, two more years. But my goodness, he's going to have a hefty price tag, and there's going to be a lot of money to gain by getting rid of him. And with the amount of time that he has missed during his tenure in Detroit, it's pretty significant. When we look at these contracts, we talked about last offseason about contracts where players don't meet aren't fulfilling their contracts, aren't living up to them, I guess. And all those guys were getting cut last year. This is a guy who's probably going to be looked at really hard because they can gain something like $10 million in cap space by moving on from him. And I wouldn't be surprised if it gets to that point. Yeah, unfortunately. His
production, if you look at just the raw numbers, it goes way down.
Yeah,
his past two seasons.
And there's
his first year in Detroit.
There's a couple of really good defensive ends at the top of this draft. You have some deep depth at defensive end, and even with Romeo Okwara hurt and who knows how he's going to recover next year, it may be too much money to spend on a guy who's been hurt a significant amount of time.
Linebacker Jalen Reeves-Maybin, shoulder injury, also out.
He got hurt during the Bears game. Got replaced by rookie Derek Barnes. Then Derek Barnes got pulled to get checked for a concussion, and we saw when he left. Then they brought on the guy we got from Chicago, Josh Woods, and then after Josh Woods or Josh Woods stayed on for a couple of snaps, Barnes got cleared. Barnes came back. Looks like Barnes is going to get the start now with Reeves-Maybin out. So this hurts the depth at linebacker, but it's a really big blow to special teams.
Defensive back Bobby Price, shoulder injury. He's also out.
Yeah. Speaking of big blows to special teams, this is another one, right? Doesn't do a whole lot on the defensive front, but he's an excellent special teamer who always seems to make really good plays. He is one of their starting gunners, and so they're going to be looking at other gunners. My guess, don't have anything to back this up, my guess is seems like an opportunity for Mark Gilbert.
All right, the protected practice squad is going to be Bruce Hector, Steven Montez, Shane Zylstra, and Aldrick Rosas. Again, right? This is the same as last week?
Yeah. Hector makes a lot more sense now because you've gotten rid of Deshaun Hand and you've gotten rid of Kevin Strong. And Jayshon Cornell is still on the reserve list. Montez is just, the quarterback position is valuable. Zylstra is tight end three, right? And then Rosas is in there because they're doing a weekly kicking battle and they want to see if he can push the rookie Patterson or if he can, beat him. And then they'll lean on him to play in a game.
He hasn't been bad.
No. Both of them have kicked successfully on all their attempts so far.
All right. Let's talk about the Vikings. 1 p.m. Sunday at Ford Field. My guess for you, Eric, you're going to be able to spread out a little bit on Sunday. It should be a pretty sparse Ford Field, probably for the rest of the season. It's not going to be a wild atmosphere any for the rest of the way. Referee is Craig Rolstad. They're going to be on CBS. With Spiro Dedis and Jay Feely on the call. Yeah. So we'll see how Jay Feely's doing after Saturday night's game. he's going to feel a certain way about it.
Happy. He will feel happy.
Well, for your sake, Eric, I hope he is happy. And it's very likely he will be. Things don't look good for Iowa on Saturday. The betting line, Vikings by 7 or 6.5, depending on the site you look at. That seems interesting because, I know they kept it close the first time around, but I don't know if that happens this time.
Well, the Vikings tend to play to their opponent, right? And, they play bad against bad teams. They play good against good teams. And you look at their last 5 weeks, they lost to Dallas by 4 points. They lost to Baltimore in overtime. Beat the Chargers by a touchdown, beat the Packers by 3, and lost to the 49ers by 8. So they've got they're 2-3 since the bye, but they're still very much in the playoff hunt. And everything that they lose or win, it always seems to be like a one score game. So they always seem to be keeping it tight. And like I said, that kind of speaks to them playing up or down to the level of opponent. So, it's a very interesting team. I think it's a different team than what we saw in week five, something like that. Week four, week five. The offense I feel like is getting better, and I feel like the defense is getting worse. Okay. Yeah, so the offense
You said the offense is getting better and the defense is getting worse?
I think the Vikings' deep offense is getting better.
All right.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's like the inverse of the line. Right?
What are we talking about here?
Yeah, the Vikings' offense is playing well.
All right, so let's start with the Viking offense with quarterback Kirk Cousins from Michigan State University. I would be lying to say I didn't receive a couple of emails from the Detroit Lions that say some sort of joint venture between the Michigan State and the Lions offering a deal to see ex Spartan quarterback Kirk Cousins come visit Ford. Yeah, I'm serious. They had like a deal on tickets or whatever that they were sending emails about. He's fine. You know, he's average.
Playing well right now.
Yeah. I mean, he's never going to win the Vikings the Super Bowl, but he's also, he's not really a quarterback that puts you in the basement either.
I did I wrote an article this morning for the question of the day for the site. And it was, I typically each week write an article that says, which opponent would you like to have, which player on the opposing team would you like to have on your roster? But since this was the second time we're playing the Vikings and last time we had picked Justin Jefferson, this time I said, which player on the opponent team would you not want on your roster moving forward? And my answer was Kirk Cousins. And it's almost, yeah. And
a giant upgrade over Jared Goff.
I'm with you. The reason was his salary in 2022 is a guaranteed $45 million.
All right. So you're looking at this holistically. I get it.
Yes. Yeah. I'm talking about the rebuild. That's how the question is designed around which guy would it be nice to have in this rebuild. And Cousins was the guy that I said, boy, he's 33. He's got $45 million guaranteed. That's 25% of your cap put into one guy and you can't do anything about it. So that's a tough contract to try and bite off. So
we say that we're not going to be thinking about this next season, but the Vikings are going to be like 9-8, even with Cousins taking up a quarter of the cap, that stuff, it kind of eats at me. It's like, how is this team still how is this team floating? Doing something like that.
They've got good young players. They draft,
They have a good general manager, they're always going to be able to tread water. They're never really going to bottom out, which is sometimes a bad thing.
Yes.
You would think that Rick Spielman would want to bottom out. So he gets some elite star or whatever, but they do good enough that they're always in the mix.
Right.
Running back Dalvin Cook is out. So we're going to see Alexander Madison.
Yeah. Madison is significantly worse on average than Cook. Cook averages about 4.5 yards a carry, which is really good. Madison averages about 3.5 yards a carry, I think 3.6. But last time he played the Lions, which was earlier this year, he averaged 4.5 yards a carry. Right?
We probably should expect to see that again.
Well, that's the thing is,
although the Lions defense is improving, technically.
It is. I think the pass defense is improving quite a bit. The problem is that even if you can handle Mattson, you've got really good pass catchers on this roster as well.
Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, KJ Osborne, your wide receiver. You'll see some D.D. Westbrook. Jefferson's become a star.
Yeah.
And the Eagles got to be upset about that because they took the Jalen Reagor pick before him. And now, and Jefferson's great. And I made that comment about Rick Spielman needing to bottom out to get elite players. No, he doesn't, because he's able to take Justin Jefferson with the 21st pick or wherever it was, and now he's a star. And that's a very good receiving corps. Probably, the Lions did face a healthy Rams, but I don't know. You could say that this group's a little bit better than that.
Thielen has, I think, 10 touchdown catches.
Not as good as the Buccaneers.
So look, it's going to be interesting how they match them up. The hard part here is that you're playing Will Harris at nickel, and so you're asking Will Harris to cover Osborne, Thielen, or Jefferson. Probably going to be Thielen quite a bit. Parker could handle Thielen, though they had he did well against him last time. Will Harris doesn't have that same skill set to be able to, be that quick hitched guy who can stick with the shifty Adam Thielen. And so this is going to be a potential problem, I think.
The tight end, well, did you want to, or Aurier? No.
I think Aurier.
I know we don't have to dwell on any of this.
I mean, Justin Jefferson's going to get his. I thought Aurier did well, well enough anyway.
Vikings last week had a very nice interception.
But he's improving as well. Like, the interception against the Bears was really terrific.
You know, it would be great if we had him and Darius Slay playing corner with, like, Jeff Okuda learning on the fly. But things don't work out that way for the Lions. Matt Patricia got in the way of all this. Tyler Conklin, the tight end. He was this solid.
Yeah. Central Michigan product. He's improving. He was not as high up there the last time. Remember, they have Irv Smith, who's on IR, the Alabama tight end from that they drafted in the second round a couple years back. And so Conklin has stepped up and taken over that starting job.
All right. On the offensive line, left to right, Christian Darrisaw, who was the Vikings' first round pick this year, is out.
Out, yeah.
So we won't be seeing we'll be seeing Rashad Hill, right?
Yeah, Hill's not good. He's not good at all.
He's the backup.
Yep. Go ahead.
I was going to list off the rest of them.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ezra Cleveland at left guard. Mason Cole, once again, might be a little tired from staying up the night before watching that Michigan-Iowa game. right guard is Udo. Right tackle, Brian O'Neill.
Well, Bradbury's back, I think, too, right? Is Cole still starting? I'm not sure.
ESPN's depth chart has him starting. I didn't see the Vikings game last week.
Okay. I didn't pay attention to their interior line. I like Mason Cole quite a bit. I liked him at Michigan. Look, it's an average offensive line. Average. Hill makes him worse. he does. Charles Harris should be able to feast on him. I mean, he should. Charles Harris should make some noise. We'll see if it actually turns out that way. But the opportunity is there. Can they get some interior pressure from Levi? He got his first sack of his career last week against the Bears. So can they take advantage of some interior weakness and then a downgrade at left tackle? We'll see. Opportunities there. Pass rush hasn't been, but maybe it'll get back. Maybe it'll get back this week.
All right. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, Vikings play a base 4-3. DJ Wonnum, Armin Watts, Dalvin Tomlinson, Patrick Jones II. That's what we're looking at on the defensive line.
Yeah. So when they lost Everson Griffin last week after his, I'll say breakdown, right? His incident. Yeah. I was pretty sad overall.
It's too bad. The Lion, everybody seems to like him. That's not good.
Yeah. It's the second time with the Vikings that he's had a big incident like this, where he's had to be hospitalized. It's a sad fact. When they lost him off the roster, they didn't really have a full-time replacement. Jones saw some time, Eddie Yarbrough saw some time. They don't have anything really dialed in. I don't know what they're going to do on that end. But the nose tackle spot, Watts has been filling in for Michael Pierce. But Pierce has returned from injured reserve. He's likely to be activated on Saturday, probably, would be my guess. And if he's activated, I don't know if he'll jump right back in the starting lineup, if he'll platoon with Watts, but it's an upgrade for them to get Michael Pierce back.
All right, moving on to the linebackers, Nick Vigil, Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr.
So Barr is questionable.
Barr are both listed as questionable.
They both missed practice and then returned to practice on Friday. So it's possible that both miss. It's possible both play. It's a bit up in the air. Obviously, they're going to hope that they can get them back. If they lose them, I think it's a pretty significant downgrade for them.
All right, defensive secondary, Patrick Peterson's out, so will we see Cameron Dantzler, Brashad Breeland's the other corner.
Well, so Peterson can get cleared from the reserve list. He's on reserve COVID list. He's vaccinated, and he's been out since Monday. So as long as he's symptom-free and gets two negative tests within a 24-hour period, he could return. As of right now, he has not returned. And if he doesn't, then Mackenzie Alexander will start opposite of Breeland. Yeah. Well, Mackenzie's kind of their nickel, too. So maybe Mackenzie stays in the nickel. Maybe Cameron Dantzler then gets started on the outside. That would make some sense. But so Breeland's not really good. Alexander's not really good. Peterson is not the Peterson we know. He's an average to a slightly above average corner right now. He's not really star. Yeah, not like we've seen in the past. Dantzler is the same way. He's got potential, doesn't really show it. Their pass defense has not been very good. And their corners have all kind of struggled at different points. So if the Lions had a passing attack, this could be an opportunity for them to gain success. But since they don't, I don't know if they can take advantage of this.
Safeties are Harrison Smith and Xavier Woods.
Now, Harrison's obviously very good. He's 31, he's 32, something like that. He's one of the highest paid safeties in the league. He had an interception last week. He's still one of the better safeties out there. Xavier Woods is decent. He's a middle of the road safety in my mind. Nothing really bad about him. Now Cameron Bynum is their third safety. He's out this week as well. And when he missed last week, they didn't really use a third safety. Josh Metellus, former Wolverine.
Josh Metellus.
Metellus. Oh,
no, I wasn't correcting you. But he might also have a hangover from Saturday night's game. So he might be not 100%.
Yeah, Metellus.
In the game.
But he only played like four snaps as a replacement. So they kind of went away from the third safety look. But again, if Peterson doesn't play, Alexander's kind of banged up. They might need him a little bit more in the secondary this week.
All right, kicking. We got Greg Joseph as the kicker, who's 21 of 25. We don't have to mention that what he's already done against the Lions this season.
Yeah, missed and then missed what should have been a game winner and then hit the game winner.
No problem with the game winner.
Yeah.
Jordan Berry's the punter, averaging 47 yards a kick.
They have a good special teams overall.
Always have good special teams. Yep.
Yeah.
Returning punts is Dede Westbrook, who's fine. Nothing, you know, no TDs. But kick return wise, Kane Ngwanwu has two kickoff returns for touchdowns, including a 99 yarder
last week. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's always somebody to fear. So
He's fast.
Yeah. So this is,
so that's them.
That's it for the Vikings. We know the Vikings rather well, and we get to see them a bunch during the season. We already saw the first game where, you know, the Lions just couldn't hold on, gave the Vikings a 19-17 win. I think I won on Thursday.
I picked a win.
Yeah, I definitely got to go Vikings again. And I think they've got the spread of 6.5 or 7.
Yeah.
In this case – oh man, you brought it. See, you helped me here because I'm picturing, you know, Adam Thielen having one of those two TD games, but he didn't play well in the first game this year. And the defense has been playing better. Now I got to think about how you're going to score this.
I already submitted mine and I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to play. Last time I tried to play the game of going one away from you, I ended up I lost that game. So I'm just going to go with the score that I had predicted.
No, I'll go Vikings 24-14. I'll go 10-point win for the Vikings.
All right. So we're not too far off. I have Vikings as well. I have it 23-17. So,
ooh, you got it closer. All right.
I do have it a little bit closer. I think they cover. I think it's going to be a close score. I don't know if they get to 17. They haven't got above 17 in a while. So, but I think this defense is vulnerable. My kind of game plan if I'm the Lions here is I want to run the ball. And the Vikings right now, I think, are the 29th worst run defense in the league. And I would try and run it all over them if I could. And run it.
They're going to try that. That's going to be Dan Campbell's game plan, I'm pretty sure.
Keep the ball as long as we can. Keep that the Vikings offense off the field. Vikings offense is going to score probably 75% of the time they get it. And you want to limit those gets, right? So run the ball.
The number of possessions.
Yeah. I want to get Goff the ball as fast as I can early. And I want him to try and get in a rhythm. I want to, and then on defense, you got to find ways to disrupt the line. I hope I can, you know, if I'm the Lions, I'm hoping that Charles Harris comes to play and can keep the defense, you know, keep the pass defense, you know, in shorter workable frames instead of like having to cover for a long period of time. So that would be my game plan. Now, can they execute? We'll see. But if they do, I think it's going to be tight game, low score, relatively low score.
All right, let's hit the mailbag real quick. MJK, how's the rehab going with Jeff Okuda? Had there ever been a cornerback who's returned from an Achilles tear? Is he a candidate? Okay, well, yeah, let's get the first two parts.
Okay, so he seems to be doing well. He has shed the scooter and he has shed the boot. So he's down to just his normal body, right? Walking around at practice. He's still involved in meetings. He's there all the time, they say. And he seems to be getting better just based on the equipment that he has shed. So I don't know if there's a specific corner that I can point to off the top of my head. There have been a handful of skill players that have come back from a Achilles tear recently. The article that I wrote about him and Akwara and the time frame, I think I included a couple of skill players. I don't recall if one of them was a corner or not.
Is he a candidate to move to safety next year, like Malcolm Jenkins did after his first 2 years at corner in the league?
So, look, they're going to try him out at corner as much as they can, okay? But one of the biggest problems for an Achilles or someone recovering from an Achilles is you lose your acceleration, you lose your burst. And that's really what his cornerback game was about. He had really, really above average burst and acceleration. That's what allowed him to make plays. And if that gets dialed back even a little bit, his game's going to get changed a little bit. And I know I don't think they necessarily want to move him to safety, but I also know that they're entertaining the idea that maybe they do it. You've seen corners step up. They're invested in Melifonwu. You've seen Owari start to develop. Safety is a vital position in the secondary. And Okuda has a lot of traits that would transfer to safety. I mean, look, several times in the past, I've talked about lining Okuda up over the tight end to try and take the tight end out of the game. It's because he can do that. He's a physical player that has the mental capacity to make a skill change like that. Is that the plan? I don't think that's the plan. Is it possible? It is possible.
If he busts out, how much of an impact will it have?
Look, we're ways away from calling this thing a bust. Achilles can take time. So we're all going to have to be patient and waiting for him to see if he can come back. We're probably not going to see what Jeff Okuda can do until 2023, realistically.
Which is good. That's the last year of his rookie contract, right? Unless they accept the fifth year, because isn't the fifth year an option?
Correct. For the team? Yep, correct. So he is got a 2024 team option. That's correct. Yep.
Robert Canfield, what do you think the most likely scenario this offseason? All right, I think I looked at this one. This one might be not only one answer applies, but maybe we have to start there. A, draft a QB with Rams pick or our second, which I'm guessing he's the 33rd pick.
Right.
B, sign a backup who has a chance to beat out Goff, such as Teddy Bridgewater, Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, or Tyrod Taylor. C, draft a day 3 quarterback. Or D, keep Goff and bad backup and look to 2023 quarterback class.
Okay. I could see them doing almost all of these, right? Like, well, that's yeah, that's yep. the thing.
What's the most likely scenario, though? I think it's D.
Okay, I'm going to eliminate. Yeah, I would eliminate draft a day three guy. I don't think that's something they would necessarily do. I
do see them doing that, but not as the backup quarterback.
He would be someone that you would replace David Blau with or something. Yeah. You'd still need a number two, even if it's just re-signing Tim Boyle. But my kind of gut was to say they bring in a veteran that can challenge him a little bit. The problem is you've already invested $30 million into the quarterback position. Yeah. If you spend on one of these guys and you have to spend $10 million, are you willing to spend $40 million at the quarterback position and put yourself in the same spot that we were just complaining that the Vikings were in with Cousins, right? So I don't know. I don't know if they're willing to invest that kind of money into that level of competition. So that leaves me with, are they going to draft a quarterback with the Rams pick or the second pick? I think those are possible. I do think Goff is going to be back, and I do think they might, I could see them looking to 2023 for their long-term plans, but at the same time, they're going to be coaching at the Senior Bowl, and they're going to get a long look at a couple of these quarterbacks, maybe three of these quarterbacks that are going to be in the top like six. And if you get a look at three of those top six, one of them is probably going to be there at pick 33 or at 23, 27, or whatever that Rams pick might be. And it might be worth it to try and take a guy to see if you can turn them into something. I don't have a good feel for it right now, but I think the most realistic are A and then, like you said, D.
All right, next question. Do they actually believe Goff is the long-term answer?
I don't think so.
No, and if they do, they do need to be fired. We need to get rid of them. Right? Like, and I think they're well aware of Goff's now. I think Goff's coming to terms with that he's not the long-term answer.
I get the argument that he doesn't have talent around him, but there are flaws he's not overcoming. And there are things that he needs in order to be successful that he's not getting with this roster, but he shouldn't need them. At the value that he's getting paid or to be a starter. Sure. To be a starter in this league, you shouldn't need receivers that can only have receivers that can get open. Like, you need to be able to throw receivers open. And he can't do that.
Yeah. So, all right. Or do they try to make a move for quarterback this offseason via draft free agency? We don't think so. We kind of just went over that.
Yeah. They got to add somebody in some capacity. They're going to add somebody, but I don't think Goff is the long-term answer.
Interesting. Like, they would really need to get a commit. Like, the scenario of bringing in Bridgewater, Dalton, Mariota, Winston, or Tyrod.
Sure.
The only argument for, not the only argument, like, all those guys probably figure they could beat out Goff, but like at Goff's price, and Goff is durable. If you look at his career, like, he did miss the last start last year and the playoff game, the first playoff game.
Yeah. Cause he had hand surgery.
Yeah. Like, but he's, and look at even the injury this year, like, he missed the one game. Like,
yeah,
Goff's still he's a durable guy. So like one of these guys sign up, like, they might, They're definitely going to lean. Lions are definitely going to lean toward the $30 million man over the guy they bring in, and all these guys would know that. It's like, well, I'll go somewhere else and get a chance to play. You know, they probably won't get much of a chance here. They say they're committed to Goff, but the play calling says they don't trust him. Obviously, all right. Gary Luke's question: do you think that Quinton Cephas, Amon-Ra St. Brown, or Josh Reynolds have chance to be wide receiver two in 2022? Or should the Lions be looking for both wide receiver one and wide receiver two this offseason?
I do think they're going to try and add two receivers that can challenge to start. Cephas and Reynolds, if they bring Reynolds back, will have a chance to compete for that outside wide receiver two spot. But I could also see Amon-Ra St. Brown being the technical wide receiver two from the slot, right? But in my mind, they're going to bring in two wide receivers. I'm kind of leaning towards seeing them bring in one in free agency and then drafting one as well.
Now, I get this is a question from Joe. What's the cap look like? What's the space the Lions are going to have the Sausage? What's that look like?
They're like at between like 42 and 45 million, I think, something like that right now. But if you make a move on a guy like Trey Flowers, that adds another 10. If you make a move on a guy like Vitae, that adds like another 8, right? So there are ways to free up a lot of money quickly by moving on from a couple of guys. And then you can go after somebody. There's some name free agents out there this year at some key positions that they need, like safety and like wide receiver.
All right, Andrew, do we draft a replacement for Jonah Jackson / Al Vitae, or is anyone ready to step up?
Well, I think Jackson's an established starter.
Do they need to replace either? Because Vitae still has another year, right, on his contract or no?
He has 3, actually.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to replace either. Yeah, they're both fine.
The only reason you would replace Vitae is if you're looking to save money, right? If you cut Vitae because of a financial issue, then you are either drafting a guard, or maybe you re-sign Evan Brown, who has played well at center, and you're trying to see if he can make a living at right guard.
That's a good point.
But it wouldn't surprise me if they're cap strapped and they're making moves at other spots. He could be a guy that's a victim of a cap casualty, and then you could see his replacement get drafted. We have seen a couple of times in recent drafts, a third round guard can come in, start, and play.
Yep. Josh, what are the odds Flowers gets cut and will be a June 1st cut to spread the money evenly over 2 seasons?
So I want to clarify the June 1st thing, because I still get a lot of questions about this and how that works. So a June 1st cut, you're allowed to make 2 of these each offseason. And what happens is that when you have a player with a big contract, you can designate them a June 1st cap cut. What that does is that puts half of the money owed, or roughly half, typically how it works out, onto the dead cap this season, and then it takes the remaining and puts it on the following season. So it spreads it out over 2 years. But what people, I think, fail to realize is that when you make someone a June 1st cut, that money does not become available until June 1st. So like, if you're like, hey, let's cut this guy so we can add 10 million to free agency. Like, let's say they're at 45 and they're like, hey, if we cut Flowers, that'll give us 55. Well, if you designate him a June 1st, you gain nothing when the free agency opens in March. You don't get that money until June.
Signed. Yeah.
Yeah. So the only reason you would do that is if you're like, hey, I know I'm going to use this 10 million for another reason later. Like, I'm going to take that 10 million and I'm going to flag it for my draft class. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Then I can spend money by paying ahead. Right. But you don't get that money immediately. So if he gets cut, will he be a June 1st casualty? I'm not sure. I don't know if they'd want to go that route, because that's a lot of money that would just be sitting there during the free agency period. I could see a guy like Vitae be that, because it's a large amount, but it's still small enough that you could earmark it for the draft class and then, you know, be okay with it. But it would still give you some flexibility, you know, in free agency that way. I think Trey's money, they might just cut him outright or release him.
Carl Kuster, who are the 5 players on expiring contracts you expect the Lions to bring back in 2023? And next season's 2022, so maybe he meant 2022.
Yeah, so 5 players on expiring. I'm going to go with 2022 because that's more relevant right now, right? 5 players. So I'm going to go through the list. You tell me yes or no. I'll say yes or no. Ready? First one, highest contract on an expiring deal. Nick Williams. Will he be back? No.
No.
Okay. Tim Boyle.
No.
I don't think so either. Tracy Walker. Yes.
Ooh, I'm going to say no.
Oh, you're nuts. All right.
There's, I think, one he's going to move on.
I think he likes it here. All right. Alex Anzalone. Yes.
Yes. He'll be back.
Charles Harris. Yes.
Yeah, he'll be back.
All right. Reeves Mabin. That's a yes for me,
yes.
too.
Yep.
And then Kadero Hodge, probably not for me. Maybe. Marlowe, probably not for me.
Nope.
Khalif Raymond. That's a yes for me.
Yeah, so probably. They're going to want some experience at least.
Okay. The only other guy that is on an expiring contract that doesn't have an RFA or ERFA tag with him is Josh Reynolds. And you could say yes to Josh Reynolds as well, in my mind. So I think there's six. What do you think about Josh? Yes or no on Josh?
I'm going to say no. I mean, we'll have to see how the last six games go.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
no,
if he doesn't really have a good rapport with Goff, well, they're not going to bring him back. Like, if that magic is lost.
Look good on Thanksgiving, right? They got.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and if it keeps up, yeah, then I'm a yes. But if it doesn't, I'll go no.
All right, so I haven't
seen enough yet.
I pick six, you pick four. So together we get five. I was a yes on Tracy, Walker, Anzalone, Harris, Reeves Mabin, Raymond, Khalif Raymond, and Josh Reynolds. I think all six of those guys have a real chance to come back.
All right, and I picked the four in the middle of yours. All right. Yeah. Andrew and Jason Krulik asked similar questions. Which players from the current team today are starters on future teams? Trey Flowers. Deshaun Hand, well, he's not on the current team, but he's a starter. He's a future starter. Tracy Walker.
Oh, you're saying, wait, oh, hold on. Let me read his question. I thought they meant
future Lions teams. Okay. I thought you meant future opponents. I read that wrong.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't want to take too long here, but I don't think their starting quarterback is their quarterback of the future.
They should start next year.
Yeah, but I don't think beyond that, right? I don't know how long Swift is going to stick around the way that running backs are. So you could say maybe Jamar Jefferson turns into a starter. It's hard to say. Again, receiver outside of St. Brown, I'm not sure if there's a receiver that's on this roster beyond the 2 years from now, right? So if we look at it from that perspective, who's on the roster starting 2 years from now?
Will Hockenson be here?
Yeah, Hockenson, I think he will, right? I mean, look, he should be here 2 years from now, if only for the fact that they're going to pick up the fifth-year option on him, and that keeps him here in 2023. Yep. So then on the offensive line, I could see Decker, Jackson, Ragnow. Yep. I could see
Sewell better be Sewell there
for sure. Yeah. Right. So I think those four could easily all be locked in next year. All right. So on defense, I think Levi and McNeil are right, but that might be it on the interior.
Yep.
On the outside, the scary thing is Romeo might be the only one that starts on at the edge. I think Julian will be around. I don't think Julian will be a starter, though.
Charles Harris?
No, I don't think Harris will be here 2 years from now, in my mind. I don't even think Anzalone will be. Will Derek Barnes be a starter? Probably, or at least they hope he will be.
Yeah, hopefully.
Will Owarie be there? I don't know.
He'll leave.
Will Jacobs be there and starting? I don't know. Maybe Melifon will be starting at that point. I think, AJ Parker has shown maybe he could be there. And I do think Tracy's back. I think the other safety spot's up for grabs. So basically half the defense maybe, and a little bit more on offense because that offensive line is eating up a chunk. So not terrible, but they have some very, very obvious spots to fill. Like quarterback and running back, right? Like those are some big areas that they're going to need to fill in the next couple of years. They're going to need answers there.
Brett Coos Cousino. We all know Dan Campbell is safe this year. When will the hot seat actually start warming up, presuming things don't get markedly better? I would say
2023.
How bad is 2022?
Well, right.
If it's a disaster again, and they're third and 32 all the time, if they're getting six holding penalties, if they're calling timeouts back to back and having 8.5 minute drives to win games, losing all the, like, it could happen next year. But yeah, I'm probably more in your boat. Okay. He's got till 2020.
I think that's fair because look what I said earlier. I think if he repeats mistakes, that's a bad sign.
If it's not going anywhere,
yeah.
Give him all this money and cut bait early.
Yeah.
Dan Hartley, it seems like offensive coordinator Lynn is being phased out slowly for his play calling, not passing game plan given to the tight end coach. If Lynn is replaced, do you believe it'll be someone specific in-house or they bring someone in from the outside? Anyway, to any early dream targets. I think that they, I would say they need to go outside.
I think they will too. You know, I think the only in-house guy that makes any sense is Deuce Staley. And I think you have a different role for him that you don't want to strap him with play calling duties. And so I think they will go outside. Look, your quarterback coach is in his first year, wide receivers coach is in his first year. Your tight end coach is Ben Johnson is not ready. And your offensive line coach is a really good offensive line coach, but that's probably about all Hank Fraley is he's a really, really good offensive line coach. I don't think they have a ready-made in-house replacement. So I could easily see them looking outside and getting somebody.
So who's there? Do we not know this?
It's Parcells,
Peyton coaching tree that they'll end up getting, or even at the rant, even a McVay guy.
I don't really start looking at those things till the off season. Yeah, I feel like we're probably going to need to look at this year, the offensive coordinator. So maybe we start looking at it a little bit deeper into December here, but as of today, I do not have a name off the top of my head.
You know, Tony Romo and Troy Aikman, when you watch those Cowboys games,
sure,
they talk about how great Kellen Moore is as an offensive coordinator and how he's going to be a head coach in the NFL real soon.
Yeah.
Do you think that's their way of saying, like, we need to get him out of here? Somebody needs to take him away from this team.
No, I think the opposite. I think he's just doing well.
All right. I thought it was kind of the opposite. They think he's kind of quietly terrible. They really don't like him because they're ex-Cowboy quarterbacks.
Maybe.
It's not in the range to be fired because it is a good offense, but they think it probably should be better. They had somebody else that's like, well, maybe if you got a head coaching job.
Look, man, I think this points to exactly how we look at things. I was not even thinking that.
Well, all right. Well, that's fair. That's the way I look at them.
Sadly. I know. But that's what makes this podcast what it is, right?
Yeah. Yep.
We got both perspectives.
We'll save the draft talk. Like, we had a bunch of regular questions and not a ton of draft.
You don't want to hit anything real fast?
Yeah. That's all right. Everything's fine.
All right.
Lions still hold the number one pick and have a 77% chance keeping it.
Yeah.
When it feels like it's 98 or 99.
It's going to be 98 or 99 pretty soon.
All right. Graham asks, who would be a possible trade down partner in the draft?
Ah.
What would be the best outcome coming out of day one in the draft?
All right. So look, this is an important concept, I think, to keep in mind for this draft. In every draft, there are only a handful of players that are elite. Like at the top level, you think they can be all pro level players. And typical drafts, there's like seven or eight, typically. In this draft class, I think there's two, maybe three. And that's about it. If they're going to trade down, I would be very disappointed if they traded out of that 2 to 3 person range where the elite prospects are. And so I don't think they're going to trade out. I think if they are not, if they have that number one pick, I think they're picking. I don't think they're trading out. It would take something substantial. Now, yes,
and there are a lot of teams have something substantial, except for the Jets, but that's at 4.
Well, the Jets, the Eagles, the Giants, they all have like 2 picks in the top 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
But
Eagles 2 in the top 11.
They'd have to really, really want something. And there's not a quarterback in this class that anybody is really, really going to want to trade up for. And if that's the case, I don't think they're going to trade back because I don't see the value. When you have a chance to take an all pro, you take that all pro. You don't trade back and then have a 70% chance of getting an all pro or a 40% chance of getting an all pro. If you have a high percentage chance of getting these all pros, these elite players, I think you take it. And so I don't think they're going to trade back. I think if they're at one, which it sure looks like, I think they're going to pick at one.
All right. Corey Rayburn, Aiden Hutchinson, Kayvon Thibodeau.
All right.
I wonder who you're going to pick.
Well, we have been talking about this for a while. And as I have been slowly dropping hints that I I've said this is a much closer battle than people were giving it credit for. And I had been slowly talking about Aiden Hutchinson being a realistic chance. I'm really starting to lean that way now. Like, I'm almost ready to say he's my number one guy. Thibodeau. I am harder.
Who's the better athlete between Thibodeau and Hutchinson?
You're going to be surprised, right? I think what you're looking at when you evaluate the two players, Thibodeau is going to have more bend. And he's going to be a guy that is going to generate a lot of pressures in non-traditional ways. And you're going to be excited by that. At the same time, Hutchinson is going to test very well. He's going to test very high, in my opinion. When you look at – he was the number two player on Bruce Feldman's freak list this year, behind Evan Neal, the left tackle at Alabama, who is an absolute crazy person. But Hutchinson is legitimately in that conversation. And when you look at what he does on the field and you look at the production on the field and you look at the way he pressures the quarterback, those are all things that put him in the same category as Thibodeau. It's just a different style. I think what will separate him is the intangibles and the fact that his mentality is going to match Dan Campbell's. The 100% work ethic, like motor, like I come up big in the biggest games type of situation, that is going to appeal to Dan Campbell. Thibodeau is
the guy
excellent.
Who plays on the other side of the ball is pushing the quarterback into me so I can get more sacks.
It's not like that, though. You know, and you know that. I mean, look, I said this before on this podcast again. I had Hutchinson rated higher than Kwity Paye last year.
Oh, Kwity Paye.
Kwity Paye was a first rounder, and he's playing excellent right now. And I had Hutchinson rated higher. I had Hutchinson he probably would have gone in the top 12 for me last year, top 10, top 12. He entered this year as a top 10 player, and I thought he was going to go in the top 5. So it's really not a big jump in my mind. That's why I feel pretty confident saying I'm going to have him over Thibodeau right now. I have questions about Thibodeau. I don't have a whole lot of questions about Hutchinson. And Thibodeau is more the traditional bendy edge rusher, whereas Hutch is that JJ Watt, TJ Watt hybrid guy that is just, I think, going to appeal to this coaching staff.
I'm biased, so I'm always going to be against this one as we head towards the draft. That's just the way it's going to be, you know. And we'll see what happens tomorrow night or Saturday night for those of you listening, not tomorrow night.
Against Ohio State, he had 15 quarterback pressures and 3 sacks. Like,
yeah, well, he played outrageously. That whole team played outrageously against Ohio State. That's going to look great. I don't know.
Here's my deal.
I'm not arguing that he's a hard worker. And he's a good football player. I'm not arguing that point. Sure. I don't know. Like, can he be an NFL superstar?
I think he can.
My question.
I think he can because he's played. I'm trying to remember how many games. The Washington left tackle is a guy who's going to be in the top 50. The Ohio State left tackle is going to go in the top 50. The guard might even go in the top 50. The guard shifted out the left tackle, the one that he put on his butt late in the game where he just bull rushed him and just threw him onto the ground. Like that's a guard who played left tackle for 3 years prior to being shifted inside the guard. He could go in the top 50. I don't think he will, but he's played some really good tackles in this draft class this year and he's beat them all up. So the level of competition is there. The production is there. The way he wins, when he wins, it's all going to be massively appealing to this coaching staff.
Oh, gosh. Nah, we're going to have to see how he plays in the title game against Georgia.
I'm excited to show you why I'm all aboard here. So we'll get into it. This will be a fun conversation to have and one that I'm sure won't be excruciating for you at all.
Yeah. All right. Now that's it. That's enough for today.
Yeah. All right.
So we're at 400 reviews now. So that's great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. Good to see. That's it. That's all we got. So
we got a rating of 400 ratings.
Yeah, hang on. That's nice. I should have been more prepared.
No, that's all right.
I'm totally unprepared.
Look, James asked a good question too. I want to answer this.
Oh, well, okay. Let me
I was going to say we can answer it in another podcast too, but basically
it seems like a long answer.
Yeah. I think this is a good question for us. And this is something I'll touch on when we start breaking players down, James. His question was just about like, how do you identify the different traits between the players going from college to the pros, and we'll spend time in future podcasts talking about each position and what are traits at each position in order to that translate. So we're going to spend more time on this question in a future podcast.
All right. So that's all we got. And next week I'll be a little more irritable because of the insufferableness of the Michigan fan. Eric, you're not one of these people. So I got to tell you.
You do not
eat at me. It wins. But yeah, like as the weeks roll by, we'll talk more and more about the draft, and we'll get closer and closer to taking Aiden Hutchinson first overall. That's it. That's all we got. We'll see if the Lions get a win against the Vikings on Sunday. And until next time, let's go Lions. Oh my goodness.